We are going to talk about our handwriting this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is the author of The History and the Uncertain Future of Handwriting. And by the looks of what you are writing, or at least typing on a keyboard on Facebook, this will be a lively hour. Does it matter to you that cursive writing is on a decline? Some schools don't teach it anymore because it's really not used that much. What do you think? Is this a big deal or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ann Trubeck. She is the editor of Belt Magazine, publisher of Belt Publishing, and author of A Skeptic's Guide to Writers' Houses. She has had articles published in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Wired, and more. She is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. She also authored a recent op-ed in the New York Times that was titled, Handwriting Just Doesn't Matter. Anne grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, and she will be back in the hometown for this year's Wisconsin Book Festival to talk about her book, on October 23rd at the Central Library in Madison. Well, good morning, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So what led you to write this book?
Well, I was doing a lot of research on how writing technologies have changed over time, like the invention of the printing press and how computers were altering how we write. And as I was doing this, I noticed that my son, who was in then second grade, was having a really hard time in school because he had difficulty handwriting. Really dominated his second and third grade experiences. He was being held in for recess. Teachers said he might not advance to the next grade. And I sort of, you know, thought, wow, this is a lot of emphasis being put on something that probably isn't going to be much of an issue as he grows older. And I wanted to sort of be able to look at this contemporary issue through the longer lens of history that I had been studying elsewhere.
Yeah. And why did you think this was not going to be an issue for him as an adult?
Well, how much handwriting do we do in our professional and everyday lives today as adults? We simply are all shifting to keyboards for everyday communication, for workplace communication, and the neatness of your script is not really going to, you know, make a big difference in how successful you are as an adult.
Yeah, and in fact, you in the piece that you wrote for the New York Times, you mentioned we are actually writing more than we used to. It's just not by hand.
Exactly. I mean, this is one of the most amazing things I think about the digital age. So many of these new forms of communication we have, whether it's texting or email or Facebook, are text-based. So we are writing to our friends, our family, our coworkers, when 10, 20 years ago, we would have been talking to them face-to-face or talking on the phone. So everybody is writing so much more than we used to, and it's really a sort of golden age for writing.
Yeah, but then we have people like Mo on Facebook who says, I think we are dumbing down our youth for not teaching them cursive writing, not being able to sign their names, not being able to read things still in cursive writing. What about all that?
I don't think there's a connection between intelligence and handwriting. And I also think it's important to remember that throughout history, there have been very similar worries about how a new form of technology and a loss of an old form would be detrimental to civilization and knowledge. And none of them have turned out to be true. Socrates was very wary of writing itself. He thought if we started writing, we would dumb down culture. When the printing press was invented, the medieval monks said it would be ruinous to Europe, that it would cause people to be less intelligent. So I think that this is a common thought and worry, but I don't think there's much basis in it.
Steve on Facebook says they don't want to teach kids to learn cursive so they can't read the Constitution. Well, I think that's tongue-in-cheek. However, what about... You told producer Brianne Shasso that some say that we will lose touch with history if we don't teach cursive.
Right. See, I also don't think that's true at all. In fact, I think that a digital age is going to give us a more close, intimate relationship to history because we are going to be able to transcribe and digitize historic manuscripts that haven't been available to anyone. But I think, you know, people often say, well, kids won't be able to read the Constitution as the person that mentioned it. First of all, I can't read the Constitution in the original, and I've spent a lot of time reading old manuscripts. Most documents, even just the ones in English, are illegible to us today because they're written in very different scripts that are unfamiliar to us. Shakespeare wrote in something called secretary hand. It is so hard to read that there are some English professors who spend years just learning how to read it so they can decode his handwriting. I don't think it's necessary for people to be able to read something in the original to have a closeness to it. And I also think that most cursive is not accessible to us today. And we need to just, you know, realize that it's okay. I'm not even mentioning how many important documents are not written in English. And we don't talk about how everyone needs to learn Latin or German in order to read those documents in the original.
I'm laughing, too, because I'm remembering when I was learning how to write cursive. And what's with the, you know, some of those letters are like the Q. It's like you can't even, you know, I just changed it as an adult. I don't do that.
Right. Well, see, there isn't one cursive. There are many different scripts. And even just in America, we have taught children a variety of scripts over the years. Today, the most common scripts that students learn are either called Dinalian or Zahner-Bloser. But in the past, they were taught the Palmer Method or Spencerian. And with each script, there's often this sort of, people say that if you learn it, certain other things will occur to you. So in the mid-19th century, it was believed that if you learned Spencerian, a certain script with a different kind of cue, you would become a better Christian, you would become a more moral person, and that if you were an immigrant, you would become a better Americanized and assimilated. So it's funny how we project all these strange values onto the loops and curls of a capital Q.
Yeah, it's funny. We are talking with Anne Trubeck. She is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. And we welcome your thoughts, your questions, your own experiences. Do you think that kids should still learn cursive in school? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. When's the last time you used cursive handwriting? Let's take a call from Ed in Chicago. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
All right, cursive writing has been around. It's been a quick way. I personally use a combination because I can't read my own cursive. But I saw, over the years, I saw my parents', grandparents' letters, and it was important to them. And I point out that in Oriental culture, handwriting, it's an art form, and I saw all this beauty in it. So even if we don't teach it anymore, I mean, how to do it? I hated those classes. The authors write about, you know, making it good for the teacher. I can't read my own cursive half the time, but I figure it out.
Yeah, well, so what about, then why do you think we should continue to teach it and such, Ed?
Is at least as a learn it so we can read our own history. And if someone finds a letter from a parent, a grandparent, if they don't know cursive writing, especially, you know, economic situation, do we need translators? If we don't need to teach perfect cursive writing the way I unfortunately was turned on, at least if kids don't learn it.
Yeah, I get it. So what about, you know, those letters from grandma? And maybe it doesn't have to be this strict, you know, illegible stuff. And that, you know, maybe we can still teach how to write cursive writing, but maybe not as the way we do now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the caller mentioned that, you know, Chinese characters are an art form, and I think that's true. And I think there, in the West, we have a tradition of calligraphy as an art form. And I certainly think, you know, handwriting is very connected to fine motor skills and certainly has a role as an art and an art form. And I think that students could be taught it in art. I think students who really love to be able to do that kind of motion, that kind of, you know, visual drawing should be encouraged to do so. I don't think that grading students on how well they master it, you know, that doesn't make sense in terms of academics. I think that you can learn how to read cursive if you don't know how to write it. People often say that's true, but it's just not. I mean, a lot of kids who don't learn cursive today read lots of cursive out there. I mean, Coca-Cola is written in cursive, and they understand what that looks like. So it really is easy to learn cursive, to read cursive, if you don't know how to write it. It's hard to read cursive if it's messy, even if you do know how to write it. And the question of, you know, parents and grandparents' letters is important. I have a lot of letters from my grandmother, and I value seeing her handwriting, but I can't read a word of it. So, you know, it cuts both ways. It's a loss not to see that, you know, perhaps in the future. But there will be other ways that people will leave the evidence of their individuality and their person to their further generations if it's not a cursive written letter.
Well, we'll find out what ways we'll leave our mark after we take a break. We are talking with Anne Trubeck. She is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. And we wonder if you think handwriting and teaching cursive writing in school, especially, is still important or not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the past, the present, and the future of handwriting with our guest, Anne Trubeck, who happens to be from Madison, and she will be coming back to Madison for the Wisconsin Book Festival to talk about her latest book, The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. Talk some, Anne, about that uncertain future of handwriting and why it's causing so much anxiety.
I think that it's because we're living through a time of change. I mean, almost every American today has very strong memories of learning cursive and printing in school. It's a very large part of our early education, and it is anxiety provoking to think that may no longer be the case. And again, you know, what I write about a lot in my book is how throughout history, every time there's a new technology, even, you know, the typewriter or the printing press, you find people having the same anxiety about what will happen, that this new technology is going to make all these problems and people are going to be less intelligent, and a sort of resurgence of the, you know, insistence of the importance of the previous one. And so I think it's changed that people have a, you know, difficult time with that, and it's completely understandable. And it's hard for us to realize, I think, how quickly the ways that we write and communicate have changed over just 10 to 20 years. It's dizzying, the pace of change.
Yeah, now here, all this anxiety over the typewriter changing everything, and now we don't even use at least the typewriter, the machine anymore.
Exactly. I mean, typewriters are pretty much obsolete. Shorthand was, you know, a very important form of writing for a while that is pretty much obsolete now. And I think 100 years ago, if you had said to people, typewriters will go away, they would have had that same anxiety. And they might say, no, we have to teach our kids how to use a typewriter. That's essential for their success.
So how does the uncertain future of handwriting impact education in America?
Well, we're seeing this very interesting debate where, you know, 6 years ago, the Common Core, which is basically the U.S. government, said, you don't need to learn cursive anymore. It just doesn't appear as a requirement on the standards that public schools have to follow. They're just asked to make sure that kids write legibly in kindergarten and first grade. Well, in response, a lot of states and a lot of individual districts have lobbied to put cursive back onto the requirements in their state schools or their district schools. So it's just a strange example of people saying, no, we need this. We need to put this back on here, create more requirements and forms of assessment for, you know, an already pretty overburdened public school system with all these tests that are happening. And so you really see this strange pattern of, you know, the government saying, you know, don't need it, and then states and districts saying, oh, no, we do, and taking a lot of time and energy to put it back on there.
Yeah. The New York Times op-ed that you wrote a little while ago was headlined, "Handwriting Just Doesn't Matter." Do you feel handwriting just doesn't matter?
No, and I'm glad you asked that question. Writers don't write their own headlines.
Right.
The editors at the publications do. So I would not have chosen that. Obviously, I think it matters a lot. I just wrote a book on it, and, you know, it's history and how important it is. I don't think that how well a student can handwrite should be something that they are graded on. I don't think that that's – I think what's important is how students write, how students express their ideas. I think we should put all of this energy into thinking about how can we make students better writers and not worry about how well they form their letters when there are other ways to form their letters that are less sort of biased towards people with fine motor skills.
But you aren't – you aren't wringing your hands if schools do stop teaching cursive writing.
No, I think that's absolutely fine. I mean, the other thing that, you know, that's important to realize is that keyboards are more democratic. Students are assessed negatively if their handwriting is poor. Even if you have the same essay, right, that a teacher will read typewritten and handwritten. If they read it with poor handwriting, they will give it a lower grade, even if it's a good essay. There are also a lot of children who have disabilities and different things that make handwriting difficult for them. And so they're assessed as being not as intelligent when it really has to do with their skills that are unrelated to intelligence. Typewriting levels the playing field, gives all kids a better shot at you know, having a fair hearing on their writing.
To more of your calls and thoughts now about handwriting and teaching cursive writing, for Anne Trubeck, who is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mona in Madison is with us. Hi, Mona.
Hi, how are you? I have two comments. One is about my grandma. She was born in 1899 in eastern Tennessee and started school at 4 years old in a one-room schoolhouse. They were never taught print. They were only taught cursive. And she was a voracious reader her entire life. So I don't believe the two have anything to do with each other, as you were saying. The second thing is, I was taught cursive writing the first time in second grade. In fourth grade, I switched schools and was taught a whole different, expected to do a whole different way of writing. I couldn't do it. And to this day, my handwriting is a mess. When I was at college and took language arts classes for my teaching certificate, I had to relearn, and it was just excruciating. And I think, and as I taught school, I think emphasis on cursive writing is a major time waster in the classroom. As you say, it's important how the kids express themselves. And if they can print clearly, I'm happy.
All right. I don't know, because the phone was a little bit fuzzy, and she thought that teaching cursive was a big waste of time. And as long as they can print, that's good enough.
I absolutely agree. Let's keep the focus on ideas and creativity and knowledge and arguments and away from forming, you know, these actual, you know, little loops.
Yeah. What's the deal with, so we learn how to print and then we learn this cursive. Cursive was what? What was the point of that? We would write faster because we'd connect the letters?
That's right. Cursive, you know, technically what cursive means is just it's a faster way of writing. So even back in ancient Egypt, they developed a cursive. We think of Egyptian writing as hieroglyphs, but they also developed these other scripts called demotic and hieratic that were quicker for people to write. So if you were doing, say just a bureaucratic document, most of writing throughout history has just been bureaucracy, the Egyptian scribes would use a cursive script. And really, if you look at the history of writing, it's been a history of trying to be able to write faster so that it's more efficient and it keeps up with the pace of thought. So our contemporary cursive is supposed to be faster because you don't have to stop and pick up your pen again and then start again. But then we also have this idea that cursive is more formal. And again, our relationship to what cursive means, it really has changed over in America over the last couple hundred years. And it's all about sort of culture and societal norms, a little bit like fashion, right? Like mm-hmm. the clothes we wear. It doesn't really have to do with any, sort of factual thing about writing or about, intelligence.
So if we're not teaching cursive anymore or as much in the future, how are we going to sign our checks?
Well,
we don't use checks very much either, do we?
We don't use checks very much. A lot of credit card receipts don't require you to sign. Since 2001, it has been legal to electronically sign a document and have it be official. We don't sign our tax returns. We do them on TurboTax. And actually, the signature is a pretty weak way to authenticate yourself. The courts of law don't really uphold it much. It's an IP address or a SIM card or a credit card are much stronger ways to identify yourself as a person. We have this association with that as being who we are, our signature. But again, in the past, that hasn't been true. In ancient Sumeria, everyone had a seal, a stone seal that they carried around their neck. And when they wanted to sign something, they would roll the seal over a piece of wet clay, and that would authenticate that they had been present at a marriage or, at a sale of sheep or whatever. So in the future, we might have, something similar. Maybe it'll be individual emojis that we all use and we say, that's us, that's my fingerprint, that's my signature.
Yeah, our modern thing of clay. Neil in Madison is with us now. Hi, Neil.
Good morning. I'm a software developer who works essentially remotely from my team. So my entire life is basically spent sitting at a keyboard. And yet, I use longhand every single day. I generate several full notebooks a year of notes. There's no way I would have gotten through school if I'd had to block print all my notes. And if the notes had been just handed to me in my classes, the information wouldn't have gone through my brain first. As we move towards having people more and more dealing with knowledge rather than their hands, you got to have some way of getting all this information down.
What are you using writing longhand every day, Neil?
I have lots of notes that I have to take in my job, and it's very inconvenient for me to take my notes on the computer while I'm working at writing the software I write. And so I've got meeting notes, I've got technical notes, I've got, to-do lists, I've got all kinds of stuff where I need to jot down lots and lots of information.
Yeah, I have to admit I do that too. I have notebooks, so the reporter's notebook that I take longhand notes with all the time. Are we dinosaurs or what, Ann?
Oh, I do it as well. I do a lot of note-taking with hands, and I have notebooks as well. I think it's fine to have as many choices, as possible. I think there's a lot of habits and associations with the three of us who, are of a certain age, over, let's say, 26.
Yep.
I assume all three of us are over 26.
Yes.
We had, we went through college, and we had, we used, notebooks then. There weren't laptops to use necessarily. And so we have these, built-up habits and practice and associations, and it works for us. There are other people for whom that never worked, and as soon as there were computers, they stopped writing at all. And so I think, you know, it is good to be able to do it. I don't think it's crucial. And I do think, you know, this question of how are you going to get it in your head, what's interesting is that oral cultures, people who, you know, cultures that don't have writing at all, have much better memories than people who are living in literate cultures like us. Because if you can't ever write something down, you will practice your memory. You know, you will close your eyes or whatever thing you will do to sort of, you know, repeat it over and over in your head as opposed to writing it down. And, you know, you might want to think, you know, of actors today who have to memorize lots of lines in their head. That is a form of memorizing that is actually much better and more efficient than writing something down. So although you use notebooks to remember, it's not necessarily the only way you can remember something that you're trying to, you know, learn. And it's not necessarily the best way. But for many of us, it's the way we have done it. We grew up doing it, and so it works well for us, and that's great. I'm not going to let it go. But I also am not going to insist that everybody younger than me do it the way I do.
Let's go to Saul in Stevens Point next. Hi, Saul.
Yeah, hi. I've taught for a long time, and it's been shown in many, many studies that students taking notes by hand comprehend the material at least twice as well as if they take notes by keyboard, and better yet, if they simply read notes.
Yeah, I've heard that too, Anne.
I would disagree with the caller. There are some studies of small sample size that perhaps show this. There is no conclusive science on this, and I've talked to many scientists who agree with me. I'm not an outlier to say this. There are a few studies that say that kids, you know, there was one study that was done. They did 60 students in Princeton, and they had them listen to 5 TED Talks, and they had some write notes by hand and some by laptop, and they compared. That study is being, you know, used by a lot of people to say it proves that handwriting is smart, makes us smarter. It was just 60 kids in Princeton. But what I argue is that that study proves that handwriting makes us go slower, which we know it does. And therefore, students are more selective about what they write down in their notes. And so they take better notes than if you're doing when the laptop allows you to go so fast and so you can just type everything down. Those studies showed that there was no difference between the students' recall of factual information. The students who typed the notes had the same ability to remember the facts. It was the conceptual information they had a harder time with. I argue is that we need to teach our kids better note-taking skills. We need to teach kids that if you're taking notes on a laptop, don't write everything down. Just write down the key things as you would if you were handwriting and you had to choose that because it goes slower.
Excuse me if I'm wrong here, but I thought that you wrote in your op-ed piece that while American schools are maybe reducing the teaching of cursive, France is different. It's increasing it.
I actually didn't write that, but I know what you're referring to. It is true that France is crazy about cursive,
yeah,
and handwriting. They also are the country that invented graphology, which is the pseudoscience that we can tell our personality and our subconscious desires by analyzing our handwriting. You know, so that if your script is really big, it means that you're kind of slightly unbalanced and maybe, you know, psychotic or, you know, that whole science. The French are very, very invested in their handwriting. Different European countries also put a lot of premium on the importance of cursive. Again, cursive and handwriting is a cultural thing. So each culture has a different set of associations and issues about why it's important. There is no conclusive science. It's simply way too early to have any, you know, large-scale studies where you have, say, 10,000 kids who never learned how to handwrite and only learned computer keyboarding, and then 10,000 kids who never learned computers and only learned handwriting, and then you know, look at their brains and say, you know, what kind of activity is in there. There's just nothing yet.
Yeah. You don't see the U.S., though, following the lead of France and, I don't know, a resurgence in cursive writing teaching.
You know, the people who are arguing to put it back on the Common Core or back onto the requirements are increasingly using very conservative rhetoric. They're saying that it's more patriotic, you know, that it connects kids to being American. They're saying it's like saying the Pledge of Allegiance. You need to learn cursive the same way. A lot of parochial schools and private schools are advertising that they teach cursive as a reason why parents should spend more money to send their kids there. To me, that's a sign that it's not going to come back with resurgence. It's a sign that it's a last gasp.
Let's go next to Jeffrey in Wausau. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. How's it going today?
Good.
So I just want to introduce myself as a child learning disabilities. I've been diagnosed since I was probably like 6 years old. That was my first go at it. I kind of feel like cursive writing, that was probably my favorite class in every grade, you know. I really learned a lot of patience and understanding in that type of learning scenario or situation. And I believe I ever received a bad grade for bad handwriting. I think it was kind of defined by the school system you're in or the teacher. Because I had a doctor and a nurse who raised me, so my handwriting is really bad. But I really find that it teaches patience and etiquette and understanding, you know, especially those of us who have ADD and extreme learning disorders.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but he says as the son of a nurse and a doctor, of course he has bad handwriting, Ann.
Yeah, we do have these associations, especially if you're very professional and smart, you're supposed to have bad handwriting, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a sign of your intelligence. I wonder if the caller would agree that you could learn those skills of patience and etiquette through other means than cursive writing. For instance, in American schools, we used to teach cooking. We used to teach wood shop. We used to teach sewing. And so I'm wondering whether it needs to be cursive or could it be another sort of highly sophisticated fine motor skill that you have to, you know, practice a lot, you know, to get right, if that would have served the same purpose.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll take more calls and more thoughts and questions from you about the future of handwriting. Our guest is Ann Trubeck. She is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about handwriting. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Ann Trubeck, author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting, talking about handwriting in our history and the state of it today and the future of it. Will we still be teaching it in schools? Should we? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think that cursive writing matters? Julie in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, I'd like to say I think I have a new respect for the French. I'm really glad that they're encouraging the continuation of cursive. I have just a small anecdote to share. We were on a family vacation last year, and my son was required to sign himself in and out of a teen club. Well, he was unable to, he could not sign his signature because he's never been taught that. So, you know, it wasn't a big deal. They just let him print it, but he was pretty put on the spot and kind of embarrassed. So, I guess cursive for me is it a necessity? Probably not, especially going forward. Is it nice to know? Very much so. And I think people still, to some degree or another, will judge you about whether or not you can sign your name, write a note, things like that. I just don't think that's a good idea for us to stop teaching children this skill altogether.
Ann?
I do think people are judged based on their cursive, and that's why I think it's keyboards are preferable, because I don't think we should be judged based on how well we sign our name or write a note. I think it's not relevant. It's like fashion and clothes. I mean, that's, you know, it's like wearing a ripped t-shirt doesn't make you a less intelligent person. It's not hard to learn how to sign your name. I mean, I have a 17-year-old son. He has a very, you know, sort of weird signature that he, you know, that doesn't look that great. And but the times that he's asked to sign something are very few, and they will continue to be fewer. If he wanted to have a nicer signature, he could practice it, and it could get better, and so could, you know, your son or other kids. It's not really that hard. If you decide that that's important to you and you want people to see you that you have really nice signature, that anybody can improve their signature without, you know, just, you know, a couple hours for 1 week, and it'll get better.
Talk a little bit more. Tell us about the double standard that you write about, both historically and today, when it comes to education and handwriting.
Wait, I'm not sure exactly the double standard you're referring to.
You wrote about a double standard between when it comes to education and handwriting.
I'm just trying to figure out exactly. It's this idea that if you have poor handwriting, you are in school often graded lower. Some people take that to say, well, then we should teach it more so that the kids with poor handwriting won't be graded lower. I take the opposite thing would be, then, well, let's not grade them on their handwriting at all. Let's grade them on the content of their writing. But then once we get to the adults, often it is a sign of prestige to have messy handwriting. Like we talked about, doctors are known to have lawyers are known to have messy handwriting. If you have very, very perfect, loopy, what we consider today as feminine handwriting, you are often judged as being less intelligent. So sometimes as an adult, having really good, precise handwriting is not a good thing.
And then there's some handwriting that I used to have good handwriting, and now it's terrible. I don't know what's going on there. I think it's just
age. It's because it's atrophying. It's a fine motor skill. If you don't practice it, it will get worse. It's just that simple because you're not practicing as much.
Verlin in Lansing, Iowa is with us. Hi.
Yes, hi. Verlin Hayes. I'm a pastor of the Church of Christ here in Lansing, Iowa, and I would like to reinstitute cursive writing, printing and writing. I have a local school system. I think I will do that. I am 76 years of age, and I can write better than most women can that know how to write with cursive writing. And there's a method of using the Palmer method of penmanship to teach you how to print and to how to write cursive writing.
And why is this important, Verlin?
Well, because of the fact that, for example, that one lady that was just on the phone just a bit ago, her son couldn't even sign his name. And the kids are using X's nowadays because they don't know how to sign their name or print their name even. And so it's part of the system. That's what's happening now. It's part of the retard system down the kids.
Well, people are going to take offense to that word. But we're dumbing down kids by not teaching this. We touched on this earlier in the hour, and Anne, you disagree.
I do. Yeah, I think that the writing abilities of kids today is amazing. I mean, I taught writing for 20 years. I would taught first-year college students. And over the years, their comfort level and their ability to express themselves through writing has increased. And it's gotten much better, not just me anecdotally. There are studies. There's this great study that, you know, looked at college students over, you know, 20-year period. It was published about 8 years ago, so it's not completely up to date, that college students are writing longer sentences, more complex sentences, and longer essays than they did 20 years ago, and longer than they did 100 years ago. They looked at papers from 1916 as well. And I argue that this is because students are so much more familiar with writing. I mean, fourth graders are writing long, pieces of writing, whether it's a text or Facebook. People can, you know, roll their eyes and say, oh, Facebook, but that's writing. Just like a letter, a personal letter that you put in the mail. And they are very comfortable with expressing themselves through words. And I think we have a much more sophisticated writing culture than we did before. The Palmer method that the caller references was the main way that people were taught writing from about 1870 to, you know, early 20th century, and then often longer if you had a school teacher who was trained in it and then continued to teach her students that. Students had to do 6 to 8 hours of drills a day before they even were allowed to pick up a pen.
Yes.
They had to do drills on their shoulders, on their arms. They had to get their muscles right. They were told to make themselves into a writing machine and do calisthenics to improve their writing. It was very, very rigid, lots of drills, lots of routinized, sort of just brain-numbing work to teach the Palmer Method.
Oh, my gosh. We had a caller who used to call in and say we should do shows on, you know, bringing back the Palmer Method. That's, I had no idea it was that rigorous.
Very, very rigorous. It was, you know, it was supposed to be to make you a better worker, like on the assembly line. It was really connected to the industrialization of America and this idea of an assembly line. You'd become an assembly line writer with each letter.
Gosh. I mean, schools today aren't completely, they're teaching printing at least, or are they not even teaching printing?
No, they are. Schooling is actually still very handwriting based. I mentioned I have a senior in high school. He does a lot of handwriting in his school because the teachers did it 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They're still teaching. There's a really long lag time. Once you get to college, nothing. You're never handwriting anything. And in the workplace, that's pretty much true too. So we have this weird situation now where actually K through 12, the kids spend a lot more time printing and cursive to hand in their work than they ever will be the moment that they graduate high school.
So we have a listener who emails, why can't schools offer cursive as an elective class with credit, but just use a pass or fail grade instead of a letter grade? My handwriting in school was pretty horrible, and I'm sure my grades reflected my unartistic writing form. I totally agree that skills in handwriting has absolutely nothing to do with individual intelligence. So what about that, an elective option with a pass or fail?
I think that'd be great. Absolutely. And, you know, again, I do think that it's a fine motor skill, and there are some children who are really good at it. They're probably also good at drawing. I think lots of things should be, you know, part of our school system, like drawing and like music, which is also similar, should have a larger role. I'm not saying we should, you know, get rid of anything that's fine motor skill at all. I think that as elective would be wonderful. Teach it in art class would be wonderful. Just don't grade their essay, you know, a D because the handwriting is sloppy. Let them pursue it as, you know, a visual form, as a visual art.
Sally in Lake Tomahawk is with us. Hi, Sally.
Hi. No one seems to have mentioned the uniqueness of the cursive writing. I correspond with my granddaughter. I'm 75 and she's 32, and I just am so happy to get a handwritten letter from her, and I write back to her, and we don't write all that often, maybe once a month, but just the pleasure of seeing that, I know immediately without looking at the return address label who it's from.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps for an invitation, I certainly enjoy to be handwritten and thank you notes and that sort of thing, which are just a loss. I mean, what people do on the computer now is just astounding to me that it's so impersonal.
Yeah. Are we going to see the end of that handwritten thank you note or something, Anne?
I think we will find new ways to replicate that importance that the caller talks about of that individual sign of the person. Again, the idea that everyone's handwriting is individual is a pretty recent idea, and it's, you know, pretty American-based, so it's not endemically true that everyone's handwriting is unique, but it is something that us 21st century Americans do believe. It certainly is a lovely thing. I think a lot of the meaning of handwritten correspondence today has to do with the effort. It takes more effort, not just to write because it's slower, but also because then you have to find an envelope and you have to find the snail mail address and you have to get a stamp and you have to go to the post office, and people appreciate that you took more time and effort. There are certainly many other ways to take more time and effort to let someone know something that you want to tell them, or to thank them for something, that are just as meaningful. And I do think that we will, you know, find other ways, but I will also say that it will be a loss. There is no question. You know, my son will never handwrite me a letter, and that's a loss. You know, with change, there's always loss. And that is something that will become a smaller and smaller part of our relationship with our friends and family. And, you know, there's no doubt that there's, you know, there's a tinge of sadness there.
Yeah. But he will be texting you more often than we texted our parents, huh?
I never wrote my parents anything, and my son does write me all the time through text, so there you go.
And because kids today won't talk on the phone, they'll just text and Facebook and Snapchat or whatever.
Exactly, and his texts are very clever, you know? I mean, you know, they're more clever than when he, you know, just talks to me, because, yeah, you know, they're playing with language.
Eric in Manitowoc is next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I found cursive to be a very useful skill. I'm an attorney. I'm in court all the time. I'm talking to people in my office all the time. The ability to write things down quickly so that I can capture the information and then look back later and remember it is very helpful. Now, there may be more modern ways to do that. Maybe I'm kind of a dinosaur, but for me, cursive is a very handy skill.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see it completely going away, Anne, in the future?
You know, not for an unimaginable length of time. I mean, for instance, papyrus was something that was used by the Greeks and Romans. They stopped using it at one point, but people found examples of people writing in Greek on papyrus that were done 400 years later. Because some people would still use it for a very, very long time after it ceased to become the dominant way to communicate. And I think that's what we'll see here, too. It will become a smaller and smaller part. You know, the attorney, there are, you know, keyboarding is faster, typing is faster than handwriting, so there are ways that you could be taking those notes faster, but for you, you choose to use the cursive. In the future, you know, there'll be fewer of those folks, but there will still be, it will still be around. It'll be, you know, we talk about the dying languages, right? You'll have the last speaker of a language, you know, perhaps one of the Native American languages, where it's been 300 years since it was a dominant language that was really used, but you still have people using it for generations afterwards, and I think that's what we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm just, do you ever feel like you're the in the minority here? With I think every single caller was grieving the loss of cursive writing and thought it needed to stay around.
People have very strong views about this issue. There's no doubt, but I will add that I have received many, many comments about this, and every single one except two were typed. The only people who have handwritten me a response to my writing about handwriting were prisoners. And their letters came marked inmate mail because they don't have access to keyboards.
Yeah. Well, what would you like listeners to remember about our conversation or the message in your book?
I would like them to understand that our relationship to handwriting that we have today has not always been the same, that it really is a way to understand who we are as Americans in the 20th and 21st century, and that if you look at the history of handwriting, you will see that it has meant so many different things. Most people throughout human history have been illiterate, and that change just has happened. The history of writing is a history of change, and that change is going to happen, and we're going to be okay.
Thank you very much. Anne Trubeck is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. Thanks to Brianne Chasso and Kai Brito for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.